Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
And welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. I'm at a place called Ballenberg in the Bernese Oberland in the canton of Bern. This is not far away from the famous Jungfrau, for example, or the well-known resort of Interlaken. It's on the Lake of Brienz. There are two big lakes here. One is the Lake of Thun, the other is the Lake of Brienz. And I'm just outside the village of Brienz, which gives the lake its name. This is a place, Ballenberg, which is a kind of, it's an open-air museum. I would call it almost like a Swiss Disneyland, but I have to explain that later on. I'm joined by two gentlemen here who are kind enough to spend a few minutes with us. And one is Jörg Egli, who's with the marketing department here of the museum. And the other is Mr. Hans-Peter Seiler, who's a former speaker of the Swiss House of Representatives in Bern, but he's here in his capacity as the president of the foundation which operates this museum. First of all, Mr. Seiler, it's quite a change from high politics in Bern to the simple world of Ballenberg. I guess you're happy to have some peace and quiet away from Parliament.
Yes, I have a choice in the Ballenberg. The Ballenberg is a living museum. We have animals here. We have handcrafts, art crafts, and many houses of old houses of Switzerland, of also region of Switzerland.
This is the main feature, buildings which have come from all over Switzerland. How many do we have here, Mr. Egli?
Yeah, we got about 100 houses from all parts of Switzerland, so from the Tessin part, which is close to Italia border. Then also we got Bündnerland, we got central Switzerland, we got Vaudois, also from the French part of Switzerland.
So you're well represented here, all parts of the country.
More or less, we got all parts. We got from all kind of house building in Switzerland. We got houses here.
And this is why I mentioned before that I had to explain my comment about this being a Swiss Disneyland, because it's a bit like Disneyland. You can go in different parts and you see things. But we're talking about buildings that actually stood somewhere. And Mr. Egli, they have a particular value, like historical value or architectural value. That's why they're here.
Yes, that's right. Some houses has been on places where they would have to vanish because the place would be used for new buildings, for higher buildings, for commercial reason. They got now a new place. They've been broken apart, transported to this place and built it up. And we also looked at they're in an area which compares to where they have been before.
So the environment is correct too?
More or less as possible. For example, the Tessin part is really the place on the Ballenberg where you feel the heat or the warm area, the warm climate which the Tessin is well known for. We even built up there a Kastanien Hain.
Chestnut trees.
Exactly, which is well known for this area.
That must be an incredible job, having to dismantle an entire house piece by piece, just mapping it out, the plans. It must be an incredible amount of work to do that.
It surely is an incredible amount of work. It also is expensive. We got a scientific department, which also does the historical part of a house, means that they write down about families who have been living in these houses and what this house was used for.
Let's look at this house that we're in right now. It's actually an old Bernese country inn, a restaurant here, which is very cozy, using lots of massive wood and plaster. What's the story of this particular house?
Typic Bernese name for a restaurant.
The Bear, Baden.
Yes, a Baden, yes. We have in also villages in the canton Bern.
Without the Baden, I don't think there'd be any restaurants left in Switzerland, certainly in Bern.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
The Lion and the Cross and the Bern.
And the Baden and
it's our animal in the for the farms, and so the Bern is typical. We also offer here a typical Swiss meals and specialities.
Yeah, the food matches, doesn't it? It's very typical farm cooking.
We also look for this as well. Yeah, we got Osteria in the Tessin part. We got the Bint Vaudois, where you get wine from those areas then.
So it's, again, it's all authentic, down to every detail. You feel as though you're actually in the place.
It's sort of a small Switzerland, yeah?
Yeah.
Where you walk through, well, it takes a while to walk through the whole area. It's 660,000 square meters, and that takes a while, but you're sort of in the central part for a while, and then you can walk through to another area of Switzerland.
You also have handicrafts that are shown here and traditional crafts. What are some of the things that can be seen here?
Well, about 10 crafts on different parts. They're sort of, some are made textile, so textile crafts, then wood crafts as well. Also farming, with working with horses, with other animals on the fields, which we show. Depends a bit on the season, so in summer there are other works shown than in autumn. Mm-hmm.
And some of these crafts are almost dead, aren't they? They're very, very old and not always practiced so much like years ago.
We really got some really old traditional crafts, and then, for example, one craft we show is how they used to make coal.
Charcoal, burning wood, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Charcoal, which you don't find, it's not produced like that anymore.
That was a profession at one time, the charcoal maker.
Was a professional, and it was a wealthy business at that time. It has a sort of a mystic touch in our history.
I was here with my grandson not long ago, and he was fascinated by the bees. You even have a beekeeper on the premises there. And one of the nice things, too, you don't need a car to get here because the Swiss Postal Bus Service comes right to the entrance. You don't even need a car. We could go on and on, I think, talking about the joys of the Ballenberg Open Air Museum. If you're interested in Swiss folklore in the sense of Swiss tradition and history, the houses of Switzerland, how people used to work here, how people lived, what they did, and what they lived in over the centuries. This is the place. It's authentic Swiss buildings which have actually been brought here, a rich collection, and you'll need some time to see it. This is not half an hour or an hour in and out. You're going to take quite a bit of time at this particular location. The Ballenberg Open Air Museum near Brienz, on the Lake of Brienz, not far from Interlaken in the Bernese Oberland. Gentlemen, thank you very much for telling us about the museum here on Switzerland in Sound.
One of the most unique museums in Europe, the Giannata, is found in Martigny in Canton Valais. It is a modern building that has been constructed over Roman ruins. During Roman control of the region, Martigny was known as Octodurus, on the route linking Aosta, the Rome of the Alps, over the Grand St. Bernard Pass, and then connecting by way of Lake Geneva and the valleys leading north of Lausanne, Lausanne today, to Aventicum, Avenches, and Aoxt on the Rhine, not far from the present-day Basel. Today, the museum is known for its display of antique autos, outdoor sculpture court, excellent classical music presentations, and fine collection of Roman antiquities. Most important of all are the exciting exhibitions of great and memorable art, including works by Van Gogh, Schiele, Ernie, Kandinsky and the Russians, and Turner and the Alps, which are part of yearly displays. Joining this impressive list is the second showing at Giannata of paintings by Nicholas de Stael from June to November 2010. The Russian artist, who was born in St. Petersburg in 1913, studied art in Brussels and then moved to France, where he died in 1955 at Antibes. His works have been seen around the world, including shows in Canada, France, Japan, Germany, and Switzerland, and are returning to Giannata for the second time. De Stael is one of my favorite artists. Perhaps it's because he painted football players and jazz musicians. Like most artists, he voyaged extensively, including a long trip in Morocco. As well, he has a number of paintings from Sicily, which he visited in 1953 and 1954, working in a minimalistic, abstract style. His paintings of the island are mainly in fauvism style. That is, the colors were not true to those of the landscape. They remind me of my stay on the island in 1958. So if you're looking for something special to do this summer, plan a day or two in Martigny and visit the Giannata Museum and the Distel exhibition. It's easily reached by highway or railroad, and if you come from Italy, you can go over the Grand St. Bernard Pass like the Roman legions or Napoleon did.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on. Peter Holler, for a long time, it looked like the Swiss Parliament was hung over the UBS issue. It was not prepared, at least the House of Representatives was not prepared, to approve the treaty between Switzerland and the United States on revealing the names of 4,000-plus Americans holding accounts with UBS. All of a sudden, we now have an agreement. Both houses of Parliament agree, and it looks like a done deal. What happened?
You have to see at the outset that Parliament, practically all of Parliament, thinks the treaty between the Swiss government and the U.S., which was engineered by the finance minister, Hans-Rudolf Merz, under pressure, that this deal is pretty one-sided and a bad deal. Because basically what it does is it imposes American jurisdiction onto Swiss law, which doesn't regard tax evasion as a crime, merely as an administrative offense. So Parliament at the outset didn't really like the idea of the cabinet going ahead all on its own to make this deal without consulting anybody. The Swiss People's Party was against the accord, saying it was a rotten deal. But at the same time, Mr. Blocher, who is the strategy planner of the party, and a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Brunner, the chairman of the party, said that this deal will go through anyway, simply out of national interest. It's a rotten treaty, but they have to accept it in the end, simply because the USA has the power to impose it. The Social Democrats are actually the big losers of this parliamentary debate now, because the Swiss People's Party have ensured that the price for the yes to the treaty is the fact that there will be no legislation curtailing bonuses of bank managers, nor any other kind of legislation limiting the activities of banks. The Social Democrats haven't got anything out of their resistance, because there are no additional conditions which they could apply. Basically, you could say that the outcome of the vote in the House of Representatives is the statement that national interest, i.e. Keeping UBS going and not subject to American attack, is more important than all kinds of party politicking.
And we have to add here that the Swiss People's Party, well, let's call them the flag-waving party. They're very nationalist, I think we can safely say that, and believe in Swiss sovereignty. But they really had to eat crow on this issue, I would say. Wouldn't you agree?
Everybody had to eat crow, but especially the People's Party, which says openly that the law has been bent. Parliament has bent Swiss law by approving this treaty, which the Swiss federal court says is illegal. I think the main anger of the Swiss voter, be he more or less intelligent, the main anger is at the Swiss cabinet, which, if you like, doubled up and fell on its knees at the first hint of pressure from abroad when it came to double taxation agreements and this treaty with the USA.
And one man in particular, that is Hans-Rudolf Merz, the Minister of Finance.
Finance minister who, in my humble opinion, I would suggest that in any Western country in the world, he would have had to resign months ago.
The same gentleman, Hans Rudolf Merz, also plays a role in our second major issue here in the Swiss Political Roundup, and that is the release after 4 months imprisonment and a total of 2 years house arrest of a Swiss citizen by the name of Max Goldi in Libya. Let's go back quickly and have a thumbnail sketch of the circumstances there and what got him into jail in the first place.
Well, Max Goldi and his colleague were two Swiss managers employed by ABB, Azur Brown Bavaria, the Swedish-Swiss corporation, and they were doing business in Libya at a time when Colonel Gaddafi's son, Hannibal, was arrested by police and put in jug in Geneva for allegedly mistreating a servant who had lodged a complaint with the police. And after Hannibal was arrested, he got out on bail after a couple of days, but apparently Colonel Gaddafi was extremely annoyed and saw this as a slight against himself and against Libya. And basically, you could say the two Swiss ABB employees were held hostage since then.
And Finance Minister Hans Rudolf Merz, apparently on his own volition, took the corporate jet, so to speak, the executive jet, flew to Libya and tried to negotiate the release of these two gentlemen, but that basically failed. And that put him, got a lot of egg all over his face for that. But in the meantime now, the Spaniards, the Italians, and the Germans got involved. It looks as though the release of Mr. Goldi, his colleague, who was a Tunisian-Swiss, that happened earlier. But Mr. Goldi was kept under lock and key. And it seems like the clout of the European Union and a couple of its key members was really instrumental in getting his release. Do you agree with that?
I think it must have played the major role. Basically, you could say that what happened was, this is perhaps the only clever move of the Swiss government, or one should say Swiss diplomacy, was to Europeanize the problem. Because what Switzerland did, it unilaterally, after Mr. Goldi was jailed, it unilaterally banned giving visas to Libyan nationals. And apparently, many of the Libyan elite, Colonel Gaddafi and his friends, used to like to come to Switzerland in winter, to Geneva and so on, to the flesh pots. They couldn't do this anymore after they couldn't get any visas. But then the Libyans started putting pressure on the rest of Europe, saying, hey, we can't come to Europe. Because under the Schengen Agreement, in which Switzerland is part, if one country, like Switzerland, says no visas for Libya, then no other European Union member was allowed to give visas to Libyans either. And of course, this would have ruined all trade between the European Union and Libya. So basically, the European Union had to help Switzerland to solve this problem. Otherwise, there would have been long-term ramifications for dealings with Libya between the EU and Libya.
There's a big question as we speak. There's a lot of speculation that money was paid out to Colonel Gaddafi, at least a symbolic payment. What do we know about that?
Well, to that one can say, well, who hasn't had to pay? If you look at all the dealings with Libya and Europe and the United States, the only one who didn't pay was President Reagan. He just sent fighter planes. But everybody else in their dealings with Gaddafi have had to pay ransom or payments or what have you. The city of Geneva denies categorically having promised or given any money for the jailing of Hannibal Gaddafi. But as in all these cases, nobody really knows if a ransom was paid or not.
Peter Holler, Switzerland in Sound's political correspondent and analyst, thank you very much indeed. As a card-carrying working journalist, I've received a great many invitations to official functions like media conferences, event launchings, and inaugurations. But over the 37 years I've been doing this, one thing has changed dramatically in recent years. There are no more free lunches, or at least very, very few. More than once, I've sat together with colleagues and reminisced about those press events of yesteryear, which were highlighted by aperitifs and very substantial wet lunches, where company bigwigs and PR people would intermingle and make small business talk. A small price to pay for a good time. Yes, they had an ulterior motive all right, and we knew it. But they certainly understood how to make a hit with the media, and they did. But in these drier and more sober times, where business success seems to be based on cost-cutting and stinginess that would do Ebenezer Scrooge proud, the average Swiss media event is correspondingly dry in more ways than one. They simply don't seem to care about making the press happy anymore. We seem to have lost our status as VIPs. Without wanting to embarrass any particular organization, I think of the tourism and transportation sectors, which used to place very high on the list of journalists' favorites. But the day of media junkets in that field of business seems to be over. Typical invitations no longer offer free transportation to the venue. There are rarely any aperitifs offered anymore. And there are definitely no more free lunches or dinners, except for the most special or extravagant of occasions. Of course, if you're part of the Foreign Press Corps invited on a special junket, that's a different story. They certainly know how to woo them. Perhaps the most irritating and, in a way, insulting developments in recent years is the loss of journalist discounts on public transportation. For many years, the very attractive and practical General Pass was offered to journalists at a 40% discount. This has now been reduced to a mere and insignificant 4%. There has also been a dramatic reduction in discounts on airlines. In all fairness, considering the precarious position of many air carriers, perhaps we can be more understanding there. But this current austerity and passion for maximizing profits is not confined to the Swiss business world, nor to the treatment of journalists. It is also very much a growing part of everyday Swiss public life, too. Before I continue, you have to know one of the favorite concepts and expressions in the Swiss vocabulary is pay as you go, or to directly translate from the original German phrase, the perpetrator principle. There is virtually nothing free in this country. Everything has a price tag. My daughters tell the story of when they worked at a large shoe store to improve their pocket money. All free giveaways that were packed with the shoes were systematically removed and sold as separate items. Believe it or not, even filing a police report costs a fee here. In this country, where the use of public transport is promoted with religious fervor, more and more Swiss railroads, including the federal railways, are now charging motorists substantial fees to park at stations, a bizarre way to reward people for taking the train. In a particularly annoying development, confined mainly to German-speaking Switzerland, I would add, refuse bags now require one or more tax stamps on them, regardless of the fact that garbage removal fees are already included in municipal taxes. But like in so many other cases, the Swiss public doesn't question or complain. An astute foreign resident once wrote years ago, "All the world loves the franc, but only the Swiss worship the centime." He was ahead of his time.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com. where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.